From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationships with it. I'm Chris Cherniak.
And I'm Claire Wiley. And this morning on a special Earth Day broadcast, Chris, we first speak with National Campaign Manager for EarthDay.org, Evan Raskin. EarthDay.org mobilizes more than 1 billion people annually to help protect the planet. Raskin will talk about the past, present, and projected future of Earth Day and how you, too, can get involved.
Then in the second part of the show, we'll kind of localize our Earth Day activities and speak with Andy Hecht. He's with the Park City Community Foundation, and he's going to be coming on to talk about their food waste initiative. It's a freshly launched partnership that will help make food waste recycling and recovery more efficient.
Nice. Right?
That's in the second part of the show. That's what This Green Earth is all about.
As you just heard this morning on this Earth Day broadcast, we are going to be speaking with National Campaign Manager for EarthDay.org, Evan Raskin. Evan, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, good morning and happy Earth Day. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here, and we wanted to get into the history, what's happening now, and also what is projected for our future. So let's dive right in, Evan. Today is officially Earth Day, which has been around since 1970. Is that correct?
That is indeed correct.
Awesome.
Yes, this is our 55th anniversary this year, and we're commemorating over half a century of environmental action, year-over-year progress measured by Earth Day. Which, going all the way back to the first Earth Day, really created the foundation of the modern environmental movement in the U.S. as we know it. That first Earth Day was really the first time that millions of Americans had taken to the streets, people of all geographies and backgrounds coming together in a shared desire to see our natural resources protected and a right to a healthy and safe, clean environment formed. That advocacy actually ended up leading in 1970 to the formation of the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the National Environmental Protection Act, and even the formation of the Environmental Protection Agency. And all of this together continues to form the backbone of environmental protection in the United States to this very day.
And can you walk us through the impetus and who began this and where?
Absolutely. So one of the key players to note is Senator Gaylord Nelson, who was a Wisconsin senator, who was inspired by incidents such as the Santa Barbara oil spill and the Cuyahoga River being so polluted that it actually caught on fire.
Wow.
And so these were things that really gripped the attention of the American public and showed that when industry is left to run rampant without any oversight, it can lead to the degradation of our commons and end up actually creating massive impacts on our health. Around this time, we saw a lot of thought leadership about the ways in which communities themselves were being affected by these environmental issues, which was kind of an early form of environmental justice advocacy. All of this came together to inspire Senator Nelson, as well as a man named Dennis Hayes, who would eventually become our board chair emeritus as a founder of Earth Day, to mobilize the general public and make sure that students, faith leaders, members of local government, members of the community of all walks of life were going to feel like this was a moment for them to stand up.
So what did the first Earth Days look like?
So we often like to talk about the role that students played in these early Earth Days.
Right.
There was this feeling of really like revolution and progress happening on college campuses across so many different social issues, and the environment was one of the main ones. In those early Earth Days, we saw a popular form of engagement called teach-ins, moments in which communities were coming together on these campuses to have a dialogue around what can be done to make a difference in our community, not just today, but every day. And this is something that we've tried to carry forward every year as the torchbearers of Earth Day. In fact, this year, one of our main activations that we've been promoting is something we call Earth Action Day Roundtables, a continuation of this type of teach-in model in which we were working with local governments, with faith leaders, with university students and administrators to have these types of planning sessions, a place where people can have open and honest discussions about what it will take in the next year for us to make meaningful progress on our sustainability and climate goals, and come back to the next Earth Day knowing that we've made a difference. We've been working with local governments all over the world to host these types of events and make sure that their voices are being heard on a commitment basis, really emphasizing that Earth Day isn't just about celebrating and talking about the planet, but making a plan for the next year to be one of impact.
Prior to the 1970 or so, there was no Environmental Protection Agency. So the EPA, I believe you alluded to, actually was established in a way as a result of Earth Day related activism.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, the Environmental Protection Agency, along with the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and the National Environmental Protection Act, were all resultant of citizen advocacy. Just like anything in a democratic society, in order for our leaders to take action, they need to hear from constituents. This needs to be something that people are raising awareness and elevating as a policy priority to the officials who make these decisions. That was really the power of the first Earth Day and the reason why we continue to steward it every year forward. Really showing that when everyday people get involved as environmental advocates, it makes a difference. And this is a really important part of the theme for this year's Earth Day, which is Our Power, Our Planet, which at its core is all about renewable energy implementation. And I'm happy for us to discuss that in a moment. But where it connects here is through the people power, something that every Earth Day wouldn't be complete without. Our Power, Our Planet in this way calls on communities and individuals to look beyond the so-called personal environmental footprint and really commemorate Earth Day in its truest form, which is to step up as a volunteer and an advocate in your community for solutions that will last.
Yeah, one theme that we talk about here on This Green Earth is the fact that most movements or changes made are happening in municipalities or smaller communities, and that's where the needle really begins to move. And Park City has made some strides in that, and local renewable energy as well. Mm-hmm. And there are projects that people can get involved with here.
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking to the right person here at EarthDay.org about local governance. One of the roles that I serve with our organization is making sure that I am running point on all things municipal engagement. I work with subnational governments all over the world to make sure that their local leaders are stepping up and sharing commitments to the planet for the coming year, every Earth Day. And of course, as we were doing this global outreach, we quickly found that the state of Utah actually was standing out as a national leader on renewable energy implementation, especially Park City and Summit County, who are both members of a coalition of 19 Utah communities known as Utah Renewable Communities.
Right.
This is an amazing initiative that is helping all 19 of these communities move towards net 100% clean energy by 2030. It's really inspiring to see this kind of intercity collaboration. And we actually recently spoke with the government of Salt Lake City as well, whose mayor gave us an excellent Earth Day statement that really showed the reasons why we're doing this work. She talked about the ways in which some of the renewable energy projects that they've already taken on have, in the last year, cut over 100,000 metric tons of climate pollution while simultaneously saving taxpayers around $1 million annually. Other city staff we talked to there talked about how these projects were also making the air noticeably cleaner on an empirical basis. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is to see that these projects that Salt Lake City were working on were also things that are happening local to KPCW's audience as well. We also spoke with Park City and Summit County's officials as well, who let us know that they've been collaborating with Salt Lake City on the Electron Solar Project, which is just an incredible investment in renewable energy. And they've been not only working on this in the near term, but also for the last decade, the three of these municipalities have come together to work on clean energy, starting with installing rooftop solar on government facilities and creating these community group buy solar programs so that homeowners can add solar at a lower cost and really connect with one of the most compelling reasons we identify it to invest in our planet, which is that communities that have renewable energy and that have solar are actually paying lower electric bills. Even if you don't care about climate change, it's still a worthwhile endeavor simply for the sake of being able to have greater fiscal responsibility. All of this together has led to Summit County anticipating that close to 90% of the electrical energy they use is going to come from solar. It's truly incredible to see that Utah is already in great shape And that over the next year, as the Utah renewable communities sign their plans under that coalition into law, they'll be thoroughly on track to hit 100% renewables by 2030.
Yeah, I just want to add that our show started back in 2007. And I always like to remind people that on a nationwide basis here in the U.S., back around then, coal was the source of roughly 60% of the electricity in the nation, in the country, plus or minus. And now, and you can confirm this number for me, Evan, that I believe that number is down under 20%. Less than 20% of this nation's electricity comes from burning coal. So a tremendous success in the area, at least, of reducing our reliance on coal power.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been amazing to see that the usage of coal in this country has dropped precipitously while simultaneously seeing this rise in solar and other renewable energy technologies.
Right.
And it's really interesting to see how that has corresponded with an incredible economic shift as well. It only took about a decade for solar to become 10 times more affordable to produce. And at this point in time, renewable energy is actually the most cost-effective form of power generation to be bringing online. This makes it a no-brainer for local and subnational governments to make the switch from coal to renewables. It's creating better fiscal stewardship for local governments when it comes to producing power, while also creating more abundant jobs as well. In 2023, the last time a global study was done on the global job market for energy, it was found that renewable energy was actually creating more than half of the new jobs in the world when it came to energy.
Hmm.
And these jobs are also cleaner and safer for workers while also paying them better as well. And it's not just the workers who are benefiting from this as well. So many communities that, like back then, as you pointed out, were living in the shadow of fossil fuel facilities. They were breathing toxic air and public health was being affected. As these communities moved away from coal and towards renewables, air quality noticeably improved,
sure,
meaning that respiratory illnesses and other public health complications decreased. This is something we always want to highlight in our work. We always center environmental humanism as an important component of why we do this work. And I think it's what really allows us to have the social capital to be able to make this transition at the pace that science dictates we need to make it.
We are speaking this morning on Earth Day with the National Campaign Manager for EarthDay.org, Evan Raskin. And Evan, you know, there might be some misconceptions, and I think that we're kind of getting over this hurdle of businesses changing into renewables or being more sustainable as not profitable. But we are, I think, proving that wrong now.
Yeah, absolutely. In the same way that we've discussed how cities and homeowners are benefiting financially from an investment in renewable energy, this absolutely is the same for businesses as well. Switching to renewables can be really good for the margins for a business, especially when it's in cooperation with local governments as well. So many of the municipalities that I've been working with for Earth Day this year have been planning these types of roundtables that we were discussing earlier, these opportunities to have stakeholders in the community come together to discuss what it will take for an all-hands-on-deck approach to reaching climate goals as a community. And in so many of these conversations, the focus is really on how can the local government play a role in ensuring affordability and accessibility for businesses to access renewable energy and other sustainability measures? And what we found is that through these types of public-private cooperations and the financing structures that come with it, it's become easier than ever for businesses to be able to make sustainable decisions and actually end up having a stronger business model as a result.
And I want to circle back to what you were talking about, the benefits, again, by reducing our reliance on coal. Air quality has improved dramatically in a number of areas. That provides public health services to humans, but nature benefits from it as well. And our show always wants to dip its toe in what's going on in nature and biodiversity. So nature benefits from cleaner air and You know, not for nothing, coal-fired power plants generate a lot of ash. That typically goes into ponds. Those ponds sometimes fail, and we've seen stories of vast releases of ash into rivers and other estuaries, et cetera. And that obviously has harmful effects to the environment. So not only do we benefit ourselves, but we also benefit nature when we reduce our reliance on fossil fuels.
Yeah, absolutely. When we switch to renewable energy and other sustainability measures, nature benefits absolutely. It's something that can make a real difference in local biodiversity. As you mentioned, fossil fuel facilities themselves, through the byproducts that they put into the air, as they fall out into our local environments, they can have a huge impact on our watershed. Mm-hmm. So much of our pollution ends up concentrated in these rivers, streams, lakes, and ponds. And that has a very dramatic effect on the way in which these organisms are able to survive. Alternatively, when we remove these toxins from the environment, that's when we start to see nature thrive.
Yeah.
And this has echoes throughout the ecosystem. When these aquatic organisms are doing better, so do the terrestrial animals that depend on them as a food source. And it's not only just the production of fossil fuel energy that is causing these issues as well. It's also worth noting that fossil fuel extraction from the environment can have incredibly detrimental effects on the environment.
Sure.
Whether it's runoff from coal mines, polluting areas in, say, West Virginia, or myriad different places in the country that are being affected by water quality contamination from fracking. When we are extracting fossil fuel resources rampantly without regard for the way in which runoff is going to then thusly pollute the surrounding environment, that ends up becoming both a natural and public health crisis. And that's not to mention that the end result of that extraction is just further pollution. Yeah, at the end of the day, it's really a no-brainer. Yeah. Switching to renewable energy is not only cost-effective, but it also, at every level of the supply chain, is a more responsible choice for the planet as a whole.
So one of the numbers that I said in the beginning was that EarthDay.org has mobilized more than 1 billion people annually to help protect the planet. That number, to me, is amazing, and it seems like we have so many people that are looking towards our future in a positive way. As much of the strides that we have seen over the years, where are we now and what is that projected future as we look to protect our resources and our planet?
I think that's a really interesting question for you to be asking us this particular year on Earth Day, since this not only marks the 55th anniversary of Earth Day, but also the 10th anniversary of the Paris Agreement as well. And over that last decade, since we formed that formal global consensus on climate action, we've seen some remarkable progress while at the same time seeing that global participation in this climate movement hasn't been keeping pace with science. And what this means is that we've kind of reached a middle point in terms of climate projections. Over the last decade, something that I think has somewhat flown under the radar is that the level of climate progress we've made already has allowed us to avert what would have been the most, for lack of a better term, apocalyptic scenarios that climate change could have led to. We've brought down the projected level of increase in global temperature to a level that would perhaps prevent some of the, you could call it chain reactions that would lead to a runaway greenhouse effect and end up impacting civilization to a severe level that would change the way of life as we know it forever. That being said, at the pace that we're moving, we are on track to far overshoot the goals of the Paris Agreement. And if business as usual continued without greater investment, we would end up so far over the levels that are science-informed and backed by the Paris Agreement that we would see really dramatic impacts in certain portions of the world. We would be seeing billions of people being directly affected, people's actual lives being at risk as a result of climate change, an incredible amount of climate migration, and even the risk of certain parts of the world's civilizational collapse. And I don't want to scare audiences in sharing these things. What I want to show is that over the last decade, since the Paris Agreement was founded, We have shown that ambition is possible. We can change the future. We aren't all the way there yet, and we're still potentially going to face some pretty severe consequences if we don't continue to invest in our planet. But what the last decade has shown us is that there are so many people who are dedicated to these issues. The consensus on whether we should take climate action and how much climate action we should take has changed for the better. And day by day, year by year, every Earth Day, we see that that consensus continues to build even more, that cities and governments are continuing to invest in our planet, even as we see parts of the world rolling back their commitments right now. The general trend line is showing that we can expect greater investment in the coming years. If we continue to dedicate ourselves and we continue to recognize that Earth Day, it goes beyond individual action and is an opportunity for advocacy. When we truly can show that each and every one of us stands to benefit from investment into addressing climate change, that's what's going to take us to achieving an ultimate victory. And the best part is that this is something that is going to help us accomplish so many other humanitarian victories along the way. As we address climate change, it leads to revolutions across other social areas as well. It creates greater equitable societies. It creates greater access to clean water, clean air, to public health services. It creates really the stepping stones that helps our global civilization reach the greatest potential that humanity has to offer. The way that I see it is that if we hit the goals that we intend to when it comes to addressing climate change, that puts our global civilization on track for the best possible future that we could ask for.
Well, and I always like to add, we like to add that everybody has a role in this. Everybody can play a part, from reducing, like putting up solar panels on their roofs or signing up for solar energy from Rocky Mountain Power, to reducing our natural gas consumption by turning down our thermostats, by driving a little less every now and then, to picking up litter that we see while we're walking our dogs, by using less water. Water is very precious here in the state of Utah. So we like to say every meter matters, whether it's our electric meter or gas meter or our fuel meter, etc. And what we buy matters too, Evan. I know I just opened up another 20 minutes of conversation.
I know.
But everybody plays a role in everything we do to reduce the amount of waste we generate and the amount of energy we consume. It matters.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to education, and places like earthday.org are great places to go to, yes, to get a greater understanding of ways in which that we can help what's happening out there. And that is who we're talking to, earthday.org's National Campaign Manager, Evan Raskin. So what are some of the things that people can go and see on your website?
I'm so glad that you mentioned education in particular, since this is the topic that we bring to the United Nations every year at the annual COP summit. We believe that adaptation begins with education, and our goal is to make sure that each and every one of us has access to environmental education, whether that's in every classroom or in our day-to-day lives. And EarthDay.org is a great place to be able to access those resources. We have information that is tailored to people of all ages, where you can learn about the ways in which our planet actually functions as a global ecosystem, as well as what you can do to personally make a difference as well. Additionally, right now is a really great time to come to EarthDay.org, because we have a global activation map that supports thousands of events all over the world. Yeah, you can just go ahead and type your address or your local area into that map, and it'll take you right to what some local opportunities are for you to get involved over the next few days to over the next few months. We try to make that opportunity as inclusive as possible because, as you put it, every meter matters. Getting out on Earth Day as a volunteer and taking time to educate yourself on ways in which you can make a small but meaningful change in your life are just the stepping stones to what it takes to be a member of this movement. It's great to see people using EarthDay.org to make the difference in their lives. And then not only keeping that within the scope of their own life, but also spreading that to their family, to their friends, to their community. We really believe in the power of this kind of normative approach. Neighbors showing neighbors that when we live sustainably, we live a better way of life. And that it's something that not only feels good, but also is good for you as well.
Well, Evan, we appreciate you being with us on this Earth Day. Thank you so much for joining us today,
Evan,
on this Green Earth.
It's absolutely our pleasure. Thank you so much.
We'll
Happy
talk
Earth
to you
Day.
Soon.
Thanks.
Happy
Same
Earth deal. Day.
Joining us for the second part of the show is Andy Hecht and E.E. Hsu. They're both with the Park City Community Foundation, and they are both involved with the Community Foundation's Food Waste Initiative. They're here to talk about the latest with respect to that initiative. And first of all, thank you for both coming on this Earth Day. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you so much for having us here.
You were on, I guess, a while ago, talking about the Food Waste Initiative in more conceptual terms, right? It was under planning. Well, months and months later, where are we? What's going on?
Well, we have a lot to share. So we're really excited to be here. And on Earth Day, thank you so much for this time slot.
Sure.
I do want to start with just introducing Park City Community Foundation,
right,
because I know not everybody knows what this amazing organization is. Park City Community Foundation is out there solving the greatest challenges in our community. We support a thriving, robust, nonprofit world here in Park City and beyond. We have a lot of people know us through Live PC, Give PC. That's our big annual day of giving. But we do keep a couple high impact areas focused in-house. We have Youth United, Women's Giving Fund, the Early Childhood Alliance, and the Climate Fund. And the Climate Fund, which we're here today to talk about, has the Zero Food Waste Initiative that we're taking a really deep look at what we do with our food waste in our community.
Okay, so Zero Food Waste Initiative, what's that all about?
I love the emphasis on the zero, Chris.
Yes.
That's fantastic. That is a goal that we set. So when we started looking at what this Climate Fund can really do for the community, we saw that food waste is a really important issue to start understanding the impacts that this does in our community. It's expensive. It fills up our landfill.
Mm-hmm.
It also, when food waste reaches the landfill, it creates massive amounts of methane, a very potent greenhouse gas. So the goal came out by 2030, we want to divert all food waste from entering the Summit County landfill.
Hmm.
Yeah, we took a hard look at what we felt the Community Foundation could do and what our impact could be and how we could align ourselves to the city and the county's goal of 2030 and being net zero. And we ended up with identifying food waste through the consultation with a number of experts in the community as well as beyond, and said, like, hey, we can have ownership over this. We could convene all of our incredible partners, whether it's government, business, and our residents, to come around this big initiative, which is Zero Food Waste. Again, this is not only about climate, it's about our community, it's about taxpayer dollars. There are so many things that are integrated in why Zero Food Waste became the goal for Park City Community Foundation.
Sure, and you've taken very practical approaches to how people can get involved with this.
Absolutely. Yeah, last time we were here, we were talking about the big strategic plan that we launched. We took a really in-depth look on what does it mean to reach this goal, and we came up with the strategic plan, and we've been kind of running that playbook, and it has been so incredibly successful. We started about a year ago in June with the official launch of sign up for food waste collection at your house, right? We offered an incentive to get the first few customers up and running. And that was incredibly successful. We have a dashboard on our website, and just in a little less than a full year, we've already saved, according to some of the calculations on our website, you can take a deep dive there, parkcitycf.org/zero food waste. I'll say that website several times in this interview. But you can see that by the food waste we've diverted so far, we've already saved about $100,000 in just airspace in the landfill alone for this community.
So $100,000. So basically, you've saved space in the landfill for objects and stuff that should go in the landfill, not food waste. So you've extended the life of the landfill in that sense.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. The landfill does have a limited lifespan.
Right.
And the county
by airspace,
is
and that's where typically people
what's
define
filling up
airspace.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and based on the strategic plan, again, we wanted to focus on our residents first because we want everyone to be all in. Like, mm-hmm. this is, you know, we're Park City. You know, we Greater Park City, and we're Summit County, Wasatch Back. We're here because we, again, love our earth, love our planet. We love the outdoors. And so we wanted everyone to be a part of this. And I think I want to reemphasize that. Like, again, we are hoping that everybody in our community is part of our Zero Food Waste Initiative, and we want to continue that. And Andy has some really exciting updates that can tell you more about how we want to convene everybody around this initiative.
Good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So in this whole process, we've been learning along the way. Everything we do, we are figuring out what's working, how's it going. And one of the things we saw is we needed a really good hauler in our community. Well, we put out a big RFP. We partnered with Momentum Recycling. And then we decided we need a really good processor in our community. And we are fortunate. We have a really good compost processor in our community already. So the big news that we just announced is Park City Community Foundation brokered a deal and helped finance the deal to streamline these operations and get Momentum to be the exclusive hauler and Boil to Soil be the exclusive processor. They have signed agreements, non-competes, and they are teaming up, and this is reducing redundancies all over the system. It is streamlining the operations, and it's really incredible to see what's happening next.
And what are the importance for these partnerships? Why is it important to have single partnerships in this?
Collaboration is the name of the game for almost everything that we work on. And when you have someone who is an expert in hauling and you have them focus on just that, and then you have someone local that's an expert in processing. So now everything that's being picked up is staying here locally. It's being processed locally. It's being really composted. And that banana peel that you used to throw into the trash, and we would say throw away, which ask yourself, where is away? Mm-hmm. The landfill is not away. It's a dead end. When it goes to spoil the soil, it is regenerated. It's recycled. It's coming back. You go to Home Depot and look how much bags of compost really cost, and realize that banana peel that once met a dead end has value. Not only is it saving our taxpayers money not entering the landfill, not only is it saving our greenhouse gases, all the methane that one banana peel can create, but it's also going into the circular-based economy where it's now coming back as good compost for our soil.
And not only keeping everything locally, but I think this is good for both of their businesses too. Like, we want to support businesses, sustainable businesses, right? And make them even more financially viable. So they have basically taken their core competency, what they are the best at doing, and we're able to provide them scale in each of their businesses. So Momentum with the hauling, and Spoil to Soil with the processing and creating of high quality compost. So we're really excited about that aspect of the business too. And at the same time, this has actually been able to create an opportunity for us to expand beyond Greater Park City. We now will have some customers. Andy, and you have some of these details in the Wasatch Back, Hideout, Camas, Francis.
We're speaking with Andy Hecht and E.E. Hsu, both with the Park City Community Foundation. And we're talking about the Zero Food Waste Initiative and some news that you kind of launching a new and improved food waste initiative. So I'm a homeowner. I sign up. What happens?
So you sign up. You go to our website.
Okay.
parkcitycf.org/zerofoodwaste. You sign up through that website. There is assistance if you find the cost to be a barrier. Please go to the website. At the bottom of the page, you can find that link. Fill out that form, and you can get the service at a reduced cost. Now you've signed up for the service. You get a small kitchen caddy, which makes it very easy to collect food scraps and all food scraps, not just vegetables. Everything: chicken bones, turkey carcasses,
what?
Anything that would have been food or was on the counter, it all goes into that one bin. It goes into compostable bags. It's very clean. And then from that bin, you take it out to your curb. With this new merger, the collaboration between Spoil the Soil and Momentum, almost all customers will see their food waste pickup days be on the same day as their trash collection days. So just take one more bin out to the curb, gets picked up, and it's not hauled anywhere else but locally right here to Browns Canyon.
So, okay, Browns Canyon. So this is a once-a-week pickup?
Yeah, once a week for home customers. For businesses, restaurants, it might look different.
Okay, right. So we'll focus on homes. Now, I'm sorry I stepped on you. You mentioned that there are some activities going on around the different neighborhoods, too, like you say, Hideout or so. What was that? What does that involve?
Well, with this partnership, we have a few more communities that will be under the service. That includes Greater Park City, Camas, Francis, Oakley, Hideout, and Mayflower are immediately eligible. We already have customers in these neighborhoods. So if you're listening and you want to be involved in this composting effort throughout the community and help to extend the life of our landfill, please go to parkcitycf.org/zerofoodwaste to sign up. And there are other communities that we're working on. So if you are interested, you're in a community outside of the ones that I just listed, please give Momentum Recycling a call and let them know that you're interested.
Yeah, and that includes Heber, that we've generally been talking about the whole Wasatch back.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Heber, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know what?
So we're hoping eventually, again, we're zero food waste. Our goal is zero food waste by 2030 in Greater Park City and Summit County. But these are the added benefits of putting these two businesses together for this initiative.
I know that can be a difficult thing to measure, you know, zero. I kind of smile. It's like, when do you know that you get to zero coming into the landfill? It's not as easy as you like think that, like, wow, we used to have 3 tons of food waste coming in on a daily basis. Now we're down to zero food waste. But it's obviously that's the aspiration, but it can be complicated to measure because, again, like you touched on, we've been talking about residential food waste. Mm-hmm. That, you know, restaurants, I'm assuming, are an even bigger source of potential, at least bigger source of food waste. And businesses, too. I think the supermarkets also try to give away as much of food that they can to local food pantries, et cetera, or hog farms or so. But, you know, they have to throw things away, too. So there's a lot of food waste out there from a lot of different sources.
And you've launched a pilot program to help mitigate that, correct?
Yeah, we have. Chris, to answer your question, it's hard to get to zero. That's a huge, ambitious goal.
Yes.
But we have numerous different programs running simultaneously. This announcement with Boil the Soil and Momentum was just something we've been working on for a really long time, and it makes a really big difference across our community. But another program we just launched is called the Zero Food Waste Restaurant Cohort. Hmm. This is in very close collaboration with Park City Chamber and Visitors Bureau. A huge thanks to them. Morgan Mingle has been an amazing partner. And what this program is that we are looking for 20 restaurants. We have several signed up. The application runs through this week. So if you're a restaurant owner or a cook, listen carefully. By the end of this week, go onto our website, parkcitycf.org/zerofoodwaste, and sign up for this cohort. And what that comes with is there's a one-day workshop run by a national company called ReFed. They are going to work on an action plan to combat the upstream food waste. So looking at the technical aspects of restaurants that I personally can't speak to very much, but it's ordering, inventory control, menu planning, things like that. In addition to the one-day workshop, you'll get 5 to 7 hours of consultation follow-up work following that. And you'll have all your startup costs and several months of service covered for you for the back end, the inevitable effluent flow from a restaurant that no matter how careful your ordering is, you're always going to have some waste. Mm-hmm. But making sure that waste gets in the right bin and picked up by the right hauler it will help facilitate that. So it is completely free to restaurants. It's an amazing opportunity. Go on, sign first 20 restaurants. We'll get in.
Yeah, and they have until April 28th to apply. Is that right, Andy?
Is it April 28th? I'd have to check my notes.
And again, like the co-benefits, right, along with us achieving this zero food waste outcome with these restaurants is, as Andy had mentioned, again, there's this great other benefit around they will be looking at the upstream effects. So they will save money ultimately by going through this program. And so we're really excited about that. And again, I want to emphasize again that the Chamber has been instrumental, in fact, been leading this project and this initiative, and Morgan and the entire team there has been, you know, will really be driving this, and the Community Foundation is supporting this effort. So again, this whole Zero Food Waste initiative has, the foundation is around our collaboration with different nonprofits and different organizations. And I also want to say, you know, Chris, you had asked about the businesses. I mean, let's not forget that, you know, our resort, Park City Mountain, has been composting off the mountain for many years now, bringing their food waste down. And that will also be going to spoil the soil for composting now. There's been some incredible efforts already. The school district has been involved in composting as well. So we're just trying to keep the momentum going and expanding what we could do in the commercial space. Yeah. So we're really excited about this cohort.
And I'm curious, because we just spoke with a representative from EarthDay.org, and we were talking about how most movements start in smaller communities and that it kind of grows from there, right? What does it look like as Park City on a stage of leadership when you meet with other municipalities? Are we a leader in this space, or are you seeing things we can aspire to, or are we leading the charge?
It's a little bit of a complex way to answer it, because in many ways we are leading, and it's going really well. Other places have been composting for quite a while, and they have systems and processes in place, and it's working well for them. The unique thing here is that this is something Park City Community Foundation decided to take on. This is a nonprofit run on philanthropic dollars, making a huge systemic change on the county level, and huge props to the county. The county has been so supportive. Stay tuned. We have more news coming out later this summer that I can share. I can't share it today, but the county is very involved. No, can't. I wish. It's not quite there yet, but it's great to have all these partners. And thinking back about a year ago when we really launched this goal, one of our first steps was to gain that support. And we came out with the Zero Food Waste Compact, which was a statement saying food waste doesn't belong in the landfill. A really simple statement. And we were flooded with support. The county was the first to sign, the school district signed, the Park City Municipal signed, the ski resort signed, tons and tons. You can go on our website and see the list of everyone who signed that document. But there's so much support here, and that is one of the aspects where we are leading. And we communicate with a lot of the other communities doing this, and it's so funny to hear everyone struggles in different ways. We work closely, not closely, but I communicate with Aspen, and they decided that it was a little bit easier for them to go the route where they start with the commercial. We started with residential and now entering commercial. Well, they faced a problem that we don't have. Hopefully we don't have that coming up. They had bears. Were getting into the bins, and they had to rethink their bin design. So just overcoming the obstacles that appear. And part of this restaurant cohort is for us to learn from these restaurants. And that's such a great thing we're doing.
And I believe we should be proud. We are leading in many of these efforts. And that's been clear in a lot of the conversations that you've had, Andy, and the Community Foundation has had across mountain towns.
Okay, I want to know what happens to the compost. My food waste goes to Browns Canyon facility there. It gets composted. The whole composting thing is pretty fascinating in and of itself, but we'll talk about that another time. The compost is produced. What happens with it? Can I go get it? Can I get some and fill it and put some in my trunk?
Yeah, I don't want to speak on behalf of Spoiled Soil, but I know that they've been selling it to landscapers, but with this new increased flow, this is going to increase their flow exponentially. Yeah. We have been in talks about getting a bagging machine. I would love to see those bags being sold at the community gardens or Park City Gardens around the community, where you see that this is the compost that we created, and now you are using it in your garden, and it's such a great design, and it's such a simple system. It's just amazing to be part of this.
Easy solutions are the best solutions.
Love that idea. Hopefully they're not plastic bags that they're put in, but maybe a burlap bags or something like that. But I'd love to see that compost go back to the schools too. Maybe if the school signs up, they're going to get several bags of compost back for their garden, school gardens or so. Because, so help bring that science into classrooms. Like, this was once your banana peels and your apple cores and all that other food you would refuse to eat in the cafeteria. Now it's here, and now it's going to be used to grow our flowers and our help our pollinators. All of those linkages. So that's there's my idea.
I love that.
Yeah, not fantastic.
It's a great idea.
Earth, I feel free to run with that. But the point is that compost potentially goes back into the community.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
And in other forms, and to invite conversation and education. That's great idea.
We were just talking about the importance of education, and I do think that I see a lot of kids getting involved, and there's a greater understanding in the youth on what needs to happen to help protect our planet. Are you also seeing that the next generation is kind of picking up this ball, or what does that look like?
Oh, boy, I was involved in education in Pacific Northwest, specifically around composting, waste reduction curriculum. It's amazing that the youth take it and they do run with it. And we are finding in our community that a lot of households are signing up because of the outreach that we're hearing from Recycle Utah. They went to their school and now these kids are way into composting. I'm a firm believer in educating the youth because they get it, they see it, and it impacts them the most.
Mm-hmm. If we do this right, it's no longer just a lens. Environmentalism is no longer, and protecting our planet and conservation is no longer a lens that our students look through. It's just going to be embedded in who they are. And I think that is also who Park City is. So we have this great opportunity to just have our kids grow up being stewards of their environment without really forcing it. It's just part of who we are. It's part of our identity. It'll be in their DNA.
Perfect. Well, last minute, Andy, EE, give us the last final details. Website, sign up, etc.
Yeah, website for sure. parkcitycf.org/zero food waste. You can sign up there for your home compost bin. You get a kitchen caddy, a curb bin, a roll of compostable bags. They'll get you going for over 3 months. Restaurant owners and chefs out there, take a look at that zero food waste restaurant cohort. This is an amazing opportunity. We only have 20 spots open.
You could have bragging rights to be part of the first cohort.
Absolutely. It's a brand. It's a way to brand your restaurant.
Yes, absolutely. Like, and we'll be supporting that.
Throw a sticker on the window.
Yes. Yeah. Again, this is run by the chamber.
Yeah, and tied in with the green business program on that front too. So restaurants get a leg up on that.
And EE, you alluded to this, is that things like this can't happen without collaborations. Things like this can't happen without buy-in. So I do believe that we are very fortunate in a community that has the buy-in, that does care. I know you're going to see those restaurants signing up. You said that you've already can witness what has happened since you've launched this in June of last year, and you're already seeing strides. So I think that we can only go up and get further and do more from here. And I love that we're a leader in this space. And when you talk to different mountain towns, we are struggling with some of the same issues when it comes to environment and our planet, and that we are a leader in this space. I think it's super cool. And thanks for you for making that happen.
Yeah, the key is collaboration. And that's what's going to get us to zero food waste. So I want to thank everybody out there who's already supporting us, and for everybody who's going to be supporting us in the future.
EE Shu, Andy Hack.
Thank you very
much. Park City Community Foundation. Zero food waste, way better than let's get down to 10% food waste initiative, right? So there's why it's zero food waste.
It's a good marketing.
And happy Earth Day.
Ah, thanks.
Yes, happy Earth Day to you all.